Hey everyone, thank you for joining me on the BIPOC Outside podcast. I'm Chris Cromwell, and today we're not quite sitting down with Tori Barg. Tori is a canoeist and wilderness adventurer who has expeditioned in some of Canada's most wild and remote places, often with her boys and dogs in tow. She also runs Paddle Like a Girl, outdoor skill building and canoeing workshops that are geared towards women. So let's get into it, shall we? Tori, good morning. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So listeners, you can't see this, but Tori is already on her way to another adventure with a carload of the kids and the dogs and the partners, and we're doing this on the fly, so this should be fun. So let's get started. You're originally from Newmarket, Ontario, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Newmarket was a small town, and now it's kind of I think it's a big city now.
Yeah, it's grown pretty substantially since I was last there, for sure. And when you were growing up, you weren't a wilderness adventurer the way you are now. So what was your first start into the outdoors?
Yeah, I definitely didn't grow up in the outdoors. I did a couple of small, like, drive up Algonquin Park trips when I was little with my mom and my sister. But I didn't really start getting into it until in my mid-20s when I met my now husband. He was totally into it. He did a lot of wilderness canoe tripping and things like that. And so me being what I thought was adventurous at the time was like, yeah, sure, I'll tag along with you and see what this is all about. And so I kind of jumped in with both feet and have been doing it ever since. So now, you know, we've been together for 10 years. So it's been a solid 10 years since I've been doing some pretty serious backcountry canoe trips.
Yeah. And when you say jump in with both feet, like, you absolutely mean it. Your first trip in 2015, your first multi-week in Northern Quebec. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So we had been together for maybe like 2 or 3 years at the time. So most of our trips were maybe two overnights in, you know, different areas in Ontario. And so Jim came up with the idea to do the East Natashquan in Northern Quebec. So it's a fly-in trip. So you have to get on a float plane, fly you up your hundreds of miles from the nearest road, drop you off in the middle of nowhere. We're kind of on the We're just below the border of Labrador, so we're pretty far north. And we actually paddled into Labrador for a day and then back down to the Gulf of the St. Lawrence. And so that was 2 weeks, the hardest trip, I think one of the hardest trips I've ever done still to date. We've done a few more trips, but it had the longest portage I've ever done in my life on it. It was, I believe it was 6 kilometers.
Wow.
It was a really old portage trail, so it hadn't been traveled or maintained or anything in many years. And there had been a forest fire that went through the area years before. So a bunch of downed trees were climbing over and under. So yeah, 2.5 days we had to camp out on the trail. And yeah, hardest portage of my life. But it was very character building, and it taught and stronger than I could have imagined.
So when I was reading about this trip, it really got me thinking about the difference between backcountry and remote wilderness. Because, like, I come from the ski world, and backcountry can be just outside the gates of a resort, still 20 minutes away from, you know, restaurants and all this sort of stuff. It comes with different risks, but remote wilderness is a very different thing.
I mean, both come with their risks for sure. The difference, I guess, with wilderness tripping is, you know, of course, in both places, you might not have any cell phone service. Like, I don't know if, you know, what your backcountry, if you have cell phone service. So you would need some sort of satellite messaging device, an SOS or, a spot. But, you know, when you send out that signal saying, hey, I need help, when you are in remote areas like Northern Quebec, you know, it may be that you're dropping a pin to tell them where to find your body, basically, because help might not be able to get there in time, you know? So
yeah,
it is the reality of the situation. It's like, well, you know, we're in the bush. There's nowhere for them to, you know, potentially land here. The weather might be bad. They might not be able to get out to you for another day or two. So there is that added risk of just how much further remote you are and how much further away you are from help. So you have to be very self-sufficient when you're in these situations. You have to know, prepared for anything. And so bringing everything with you and knowing what to do in certain situations, you lose your boat, you lose your gear, you know, you're windbound or whatever it may be. You really have to be prepared and have that knowledge and experience and training to know what to do in those situations so that you don't need to rely on external assistance, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned communication. And recently, like in the fall here, we saw NBC with fake trails on Google Maps, resulting in backcountry rescues and people having to get backcountry rescued because they were relying on their cell phones. What's your approach to navigation and communication? Like, what sort of tech tools do you take with you?
So we bring an InReach. So you can text, and then there's the SOS button. We bring a GPS. We actually have like, it's an InReach GPS that together. So you can actually see your maps on it, and you can have the maps downloaded into it. So you don't need any type of internet connection, and you can access that and update where you are in comparison to the map. And then, yeah, it has the SOS. It has the texting, which is a nice peace of mind because you can just send a note to your family and be like, hey, we're good. Here's our location. And it can kind of leave that little breadcrumb trail too. Like if you do disappear, like, well, their last message came from this, you know, this GPS location. And then maps, of course, like we always make sure we have paper, physical paper maps with us at all times of, you know, trip beginning to end, because, you know, as much as you want to rely on this technology, you just can't. What if it dies? What if you have no way to charge it, or your charging contraptions break, or whatever it is? So it's always important to have all your maps and your escape route or your emergency backup plan and things like that.
Yeah. Do you use solar for charging?
We do. So we bring some generators often because we film all of our stuff as well. So, I mean, we require a lot of battery power when we're in the backcountry, but for somebody who isn't filming everything, you could probably bring those little battery packs. Yeah, the InReaches last a very long time. So like, we just don't really turn it on throughout the day until we need it. So we just conserve the battery that way. And they really do, like, they'll last a whole 14-day trip without having to charge it if you're using the battery appropriately.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So another of your big trips, you did one after the other. First, you hiked from Jasper to Grand Cache. Then you went up to the Northwest Territories to paddle the Mountain River. How do you even plan for a multi-activity trip like that?
Oh, my goodness. It was big. It was a lot. So, we did 8 days in Jasper. So we had to have our gear in Jasper. We also needed a camper van because we were going to be driving from Jasper to the Northwest Territory. So that was also like a bit of an overlanding trip in between that we had to plan for. So what we did was we actually packed up our food barrels for the canoe trip and actually had them shipped up to the outfitter that was outfitting our, that was flying us in to the Mountain River. And so that, and we shipped as much as we could, like as much gear as we could. And then we rented canoes up there. Our backpacking trip, I think we just flew with that because, I mean, it was just, you know, ideally one backpack each. So that's fairly reasonable. But yeah, there was a lot of packing and prepping and going into that and logistics, just getting everything up there, because you don't really think about, you know, the food, prepping all the food and trying to get all the dehydrated meals and everything. There was also two other people who joined us up there. So we had to pack the food for them as well. And so a ton of work separating the gear and what we're using for both trips that we need to make sure we, you know, unpack from our backpacking trip and transfer over to our canoe tripping gear. And yeah, it was quite the logistical challenge, I guess you'll say.
No kidding. And I mean, it's a little bit different packing a canoe versus the amount of weight you can actually put on your back.
Yes. Yeah, we're canoe trippers, so we pack heavy. We like to bring all the comforts and just, you know, we don't have to really think about ultralight, you know, so we will bring the bigger stove and the fuel and whatever. And so packing for backpacking was a challenge because, like I said, we're not very familiar with all the ultralight gear. And so we did what we thought was a good job at packing light, but then, you know, we're out there and we're like, yeah, this is really hard. So, but, you know, lesson learned, we did it. But our first day, we might have bitten off more than we can chew, but, you know, we're stubborn and we powered through, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, the photos are incredible. And listeners will post photos and Tori's trip synopsis on the links in the show notes. Now, Was your approach to hiking a little bit differently? Because, I mean, navigating on foot is a little bit more of a serious thing than navigating on the river. Like, the river's kind of eventually going to take you where you need to go.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the trail was fairly well-worn and marked through Jasper. It was in, oh geez, Willmore Wilderness. Once we got in there, like over the height of land between Jasper and Willmore, that's where we actually lost the trail for a little bit because that part is not as well traveled. So, but again, we had our GPS, so we got back on track fairly quickly. But yeah, there is, I guess, I've never really thought about that. I guess there's a different risk when it comes to getting lost on foot because, you know, it's harder to get out of there when you're on foot versus in a canoe and you can kind of travel. However, on lakes, it's easy to get lost and there's the risk of dumping and losing all your gear. So it's kind of an interesting balance because I have this, I don't really like to admit it, but I'm actually pretty fearful of water. So that added fear of like dumping in the canoe is always there for me. I'm so terrified of that happening at all times. So actually the hiking is something I really enjoyed because I'm like, well, I'm not afraid of just like falling into the water and everything getting soaked. And, you know, we had enough food that we could probably just sit down, set up camp and stick it out there and wait for help if we were to really get into trouble, like get really lost. But again, that's where your GPS and your maps and all of that come in super handy. So
this was 160 kilometers from Jasper to Grand Cache and then flew up to Norman Wells. Did you bring your dogs with you?
Yeah, so we brought our dog Buck. He flew out to Edmonton with us. Then we drove out to Jasper. He did the trip with us. And then we drove from Grand Cache up to Northwest Territories. And then he flew on the float plane with us to the Mountain River, did the trip with us, and then flew back to Norman Wells with us. Yeah, he was a well-traveled dog. He did all of our, so we did, the one in Northern Quebec was also a fly-in that he joined us on, and the one in Northern Saskatchewan as well was a fly-in. He did that one with us. So he was one of the most laid-back, chill dogs I've ever met, and everyone would always comment that. He just did not care about much, but he loved going on these adventures and just was like, he was the best companion on these trips.
That's incredible. I mean, your trips, you've got your children with you, you've got your dogs with you. I mean, like when my sister-in-law shows up at my house with the babies, she's got almost an entire pickup truck full of stuff for them to come to my house 3 hours away. How do you approach traveling with children in the backcountry?
It's very stressful. I'm not gonna lie. There is so much forethought that goes into it, especially one of our kids has disabilities. And so he requires, you know, additional devices and medication and things like that. So just him alone, making sure we have everything we need for him is just, you know, top of our priority because I'm okay if I'm a little uncomfortable on these trips. That's fine. I don't want Wesley and Hudson to be uncomfortable. And because Wesley can't tell me how he's feeling, if he's a little cold or a little hungry, it's a lot of it being anticipatory of his needs, you know, like anticipating, okay, you know, are his hands going to get cold today? What do we need to have to prepare for that? And, you know, we pack so much stuff. And this is why canoe tripping is great because you can load that canoe pretty full. Whereas if we're backpacking, you can only carry so much stuff and you usually end up carrying the kids too, right? So once you've got a kid on your back, that limits the rest of the amount of weight you can add to that. So that's why we like canoe tripping because you can really get out into the backcountry and go pretty far and get into pretty remote places with the kids and with all the stuff that's going to make you safe and comfortable and make the trip enjoyable. So yeah, just even for our two-night overnight trip that we're going on right now, our truck is absolutely loaded and we've got a trailer. I mean, we brought the snowmobile, but, you know, it's just there's so much stuff.
You talked before about like some backlash and some gatekeeping you have gotten when you've posted on Instagram or on the internet your adventures that include your children. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you get so many positive comments supporting you and, wow, that's so incredible. It's so good for the kids. But then you get the one comment that's, how dare you bring your children out there? And why would you put them through this? And things like that, you know. And I guess my thought is, when you don't know anything about camping or you're not familiar with it or experienced with it, I can totally understand why it would seem like a risky thing to do. Absolutely. Sure. Okay. It seems risky. We're bringing our kid into northern BC, the middle of nowhere. But Jim and I have built up this experience over years and years of going out there. And we would never do this if we didn't know all of the things to bring, the first aid kits and all of the just the safety background to have and things like that. So I can understand where people are coming from when they make these comments, because you're fearful of what you don't know, right? So I kind of try to give them the benefit of the doubt that if they were to understand the trips that we've been on and the experience we've gained and the knowledge we have, that it is okay to take them on these trips. And we have thought about everything. The trips that we pick are very specific based on how accessible they are. Yeah, sure, they're remote, but the last trip we did on the Stikine River, it's 100% accessible by jet boat. So within a few hours, somebody could be coming up and picking us up. We did the French River with the kids. Different sections on that river are accessible through by motorboat. So it seems scary, it seems remote, and there are definitely risks that come with it, but we have lists upon lists of what we're bringing and what we're going to prepare for. And okay, what's our backup plan? What's the emergency exit? Like, we are prepared. And, you know, Wesley, with his disabilities, he has many therapists that are involved in his care, pediatricians, so on and so forth. And every one of them are well aware of what we do with him. And they all think it's so great for him and that it's actually helped his development. And I guess when you choose to put yourself on the internet, you're bound to get some sort of pushback. And so it is what it is. I try not to take it personally and I try to educate, but sometimes I find myself getting frustrated and maybe responding a little more angrily than I need to. But again, I try to give everyone the benefit of the doubt.
I really appreciate that perspective. And I think it's very generous, the idea that people fear what they don't know and they don't understand. I don't have children, but with my nieces and nephews, I've taken the position of mind your business, which is not as generous.
It's a good position to take, I've got to say, you know?
So you went on your first solo paddle, all girls canoe trip in 2019 as a new mother. And yes, that inspired what has become your business, what has become, you know, how we got to know each other. And so tell me about that trip and how it changed your perspective.
Yeah. So a friend of mine invited me on this trip. She was planning to go on her own solo trip. And so, but she decided to invite me along as kind of a companion. So we each soloed our own canoes, had all our own outfit and didn't have to really worry about each other's stuff at any point, which was really, ever since then, I'm like, this is the way to trip. but anyways, so yeah, so it was actually right in the middle or kind of the tail end of the period of the testing we were going through with my oldest son, Wesley. So Wesley's my first son. We noticed at about 4 months old, his eyes were crossing. And from that point on, we noticed he was developmentally delayed. So our testing process started at about 6 months old in January of 2019. And by, when did I go on the trip? I think it was September I went on the trip. And we still hadn't received a diagnosis for him at that point. And so very high stress moment in my life, like the most stressed I've ever been about anything. Like anytime I received a phone call, I felt like vomiting. And, you know, he had seizures and was very developmentally delayed. At this point, he's, you know, 14 months old, still not sitting up and all of these things, right? So very scary moment. And so this trip opportunity came up and it was a week long and I was able to go. And so it was just kind of the perfect thing for me. It was exactly what I needed as a reminder that, you know, no matter what happens with Wesley, I'm still going to be able to do the things that I enjoy doing. I'm still going to have these moments to myself. B, I'm still capable and like strong and independent. And I can get out here and paddle my own canoe and, you know, get into the backcountry by myself. Like, this is, it was incredibly empowering. And also just kind of taught me that I can take on challenges and overcome them. Like, I can face adversity. And, you know, the challenges that you come across in the backcountry, they seem so terrifying, right? Because you're like, you're in the middle of nowhere. You're like, are we going to be okay if the boat dumps or if I lose my stuff? And then when you get back home, you're like, well, everything's so easy. We've got help close by. We have access to anything we need, right? So it kind of puts things into perspective. And I'm like, you know, we're going to be okay. Wesley's going to be okay. We've got so many people involved in our life that are here to support us and help us. And it just, yeah, it just gave me kind of a new lease on life. And then my idea was Paddle Like a Girl. I was like, it was so empowering that I was like, I need to share this with other women specifically. My thought was like, moms who kind of lose themselves in motherhood and feel like, this is who I am now and this is all I'm going to be. You can still have that thing. It doesn't need to be canoeing, but I feel like it's more than that. My workshops are more than that. It's just showing you your strength and what you're capable of and that you are resilient and all of that. So I kind of thought teaching women how to canoe and lift their own canoe and get how you get into the backcountry is going to be a little bit more of an empowerment thing than actually just the sport of canoeing, I guess, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, that makes sense. And it's such an important lesson to learn. I mean, you know, women, with all of the things we take on, I think sometimes we forget that we're no good to anybody if we don't take good care of ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing I really like, you use an inclusive definition of women in terms of gender, size, age, socioeconomic factors, culture. Like, what was that sort of intentional or accidental or a thought process to that?
Well, I just myself, like me being a woman of color, canoeing specifically is very, it's a very much a white male sport. Like, let's be honest. And so me, when I'm in the backcountry or launching my canoe somewhere, it's typically white folks or men. And so I felt very out of place for a long time. Even I still do to this day feel out of place and feel like I need to prove myself to belong. And so I just want it to be that inclusive space for people to know, like, listen, this is a space for you. If this is something that you felt like you didn't belong in, you do belong, and this is where you can kind of get your foot in the door so that you can feel that confidence and you don't have to feel like canoeing isn't for you anymore. You know, just, it was really just how I was feeling. And I just want to open the door for people who fear kind of being excluded or treated as though, yeah, they don't belong in this space, basically.
So in addition to empowering women by giving them these opportunities, there was sort of like an inadvertent benefit where you started to build community. You've talked about how graduates have stayed in touch after workshops.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Like, I love it so much. So I wasn't sure what to expect. Like, I knew what I wanted to do and what the goals were. And so the first couple workshops were probably a little rusty, but now 4 years later, like, it's just women are leaving there with new friends. They don't want to leave. They're like, oh, you can just tell they're standing in the driveway like, hello, do I have to leave this place now? Because it's the whole experience. They get to get out of the city or wherever, their house, whatever it is. They come to this beautiful spot on the river. They get to be with other women who have the same interests and goals and are all kind of putting themselves in this vulnerable position. So, and then they surprise themselves or they learn something new or they just connect with another member in the group and they stay in touch and then they're going on trips afterwards. And it is really so cool. And I certainly don't want to take credit for it because, you know, I'm just happy to be able to provide this space for people to meet and grow and stay in touch and become friends. And yeah, I don't know. It's really the coolest thing ever. I couldn't be happier with how it's all turning out.
It sounds absolutely incredible. I have family in and around where you are. And every time we start thinking about going out there, I look to see if you've got workshops.
Oh, cool.
So tell the listeners, what do they expect when they come out for a workshop? Like, what happens?
Okay. Yeah. So it's two nights. You come up to my place. You're camped on my property. So it is not, you're not in the back country. It's very much front country, but we live on the Magnetawan River and it is really a beautiful spot. We're right between two rapids. So there is a nice little calm spot for swimming there. And so night one, everyone arrives, set up your tent. We have a little bonfire, have a little snack over the fire, and we just get to know each other. So it's really laid back night one, kind of breaking the ice. And then Saturday morning, breakfast, coffee, bottomless coffee, bottomless tea, whatever you might drink. And we just jump right into it. We talk about map reading, trip planning, and this is all very basic. It's not, I'm not a professional map. I don't even know what the professional term is for, I'm not a cartographer.
Cartographer, yeah, that's very, what I was thinking.
It's very basic, you know, but just so that you know how to navigate your way around lakes and rivers and things like that. But map reading, trip planning, and going over gear, and very specific to canoe tripping gear, so waterproofing and things like that. And then we get into the canoe. So chat about the canoe, the basics of it, how you keep the canoe straight on the water. And then we start loading the canoes onto shoulders and we actually portage into the lake that's across the street. It's about a 400 meter portage. So it's a perfect length. And our canoes are pretty heavy. So the canoes are anywhere from 40 to 80 pounds. So you can, you know, you can lift, take the lighter one or the heavier one, whatever you feel like challenging yourself to do. And we get on the water and we paddle for, it's about 2 kilometers, and we head up river to a beautiful little campsite. It's on an island, perfect little swimming hole. It's got a fire pit. We have lunch over the fire, have lots of finger foods. And then that's your opportunity to try solo paddling. So we're there for a couple hours and then we head back. Everyone has the opportunity to paddle stern, so steering from the back, just to kind of really work on those skills. And then we portage back to my house. And then once we're back at the house, we usually, everyone goes for a little swim because it was a bit of a challenging day and everyone's pretty sweaty, and go for a swim, hang out. And then we get dinner ready and we have dinner over the fire. And then that's just kind of our opportunity to just hang out, chat, let loose a little bit, camp out one more night. And then the next morning I bring in a yoga instructor and she runs a yoga class right by the river there. And while I, myself and Sherry cooked a nice hot breakfast for everyone. And when yoga's done, you have a nice breakfast. And then that's when everyone just kind of starts packing up and, you know, we wrap it up, any questions, you know, whatever we want to chat about. And then everyone heads out by usually around 12 o'clock.
That sounds like the perfect weekend. It really does. So you started 4 years ago offering 4 workshops. Now you're doing more. They're selling out. Now you've got a new partnership. You're offering multi-day trips. So what's next? What's coming down the pipeline for Paddle Like a...
Yeah, that is a great question. So we have started adding half-day workshops in the GTA. So they're basically just condensed down to 4 hours and it's all just about canoeing. So it's just, I've just taken the canoeing portion and just put it into a 4 hour period, and down in the GTA, it's just a little bit more accessible for people who can't take the whole weekend or, you know, can't afford the full weekend workshop. And then I have brought on somebody to take on more half day workshops. She'll be running them in the core with us, hopefully. And he is going to be starting off by doing just, I think, the half day workshops. And so we're going to bring on somebody else to also help her with those workshops. So that's the goal this year, is to see how that goes with her. Her name is Elise. See what she thinks, see if she likes it. Maybe she can take on more. I really want it to kind of evolve. And I'm happy with folks coming to me and being like, hey, I'd love to run workshops in this area. And this is my proposal, and this is where I can get the canoes and what the workshops will look like. I'm happy with it changing and evolving and growing. I want it to be a bigger community of people, and it doesn't even have to be canoeing. It can be stand-up paddleboarding or kayaking, whatever it is. It's all just kind of the atmosphere and the idea of women getting out on the water and feeling a sense of community and connection and empowerment and, you know, just all of that. So I'm super excited to see where it goes and how it grows. I've chatted with quite a few people this year who are interested in joining the team. So yeah, really excited.
Incredible. And what about for yourself and the family? Do you have any big adventures planned coming up?
We do. This year is looking pretty exciting, actually. So right now we're headed out on just a 2-night winter trip. We're going to be hot tenting, and then we're going to head out again next weekend for another winter camping. And then we're actually heading to an off-grid cabin. It's called Cabinscapes, which is so beautiful. It's just a tiny little cabin in the Kawarthas, and well, in Haliburton, I guess. And anyway, so that's something we've been doing annually. So we're going to be there for 2 nights. At the end of April, I get to go on a trip to the Green River with another group of women, which I'm really excited about, in Utah. And then in May, I'm running a workshop with the BIPOC Outdoor Gear Library in Hamilton. So excited. July and August, I have my workshops. And then at the end of August, we are heading to the Yukon as a family. So we are going to be paddling 14 days on the Big Salmon River as a family. And then my husband's going to take off and do a week-long hunting trip while I stay in an off-grid cabin with the kids. And then he's going to come back and I'm going to go on a five-day backpacking trip in Tombstone Territorial Park.
Oh, incredible.
So that is our year, and I'm so excited. It's just so crazy to me that this is what we're looking at this year, because you know it's a lot, but I'm like, what else would I rather be doing? We've made a career out of this somehow, and it's exciting to just be able to grow and plan these things and have it all laid out and have something to look forward to. So
what an incredible life you have built. Tori, how do our listeners find you? How do they follow your adventures?
So you can follow me at Tori Goes Outside on Instagram, is where I post kind of just little shorts of our trips. If you want to see full length movie style versions of our trips, you can go to my husband's YouTube channel. It's Jim Baird Adventurer. Otherwise, Paddle Like a Girl. If you're interested in a workshop, it's paddlelikeagirl.com, or on Instagram, it's paddlelikeagirl_. I'm not the best at updating my Instagram on Paddle Like a Girl, but all the information you need is on the website.
Incredible. Listeners, you're going to find all of those links on our show notes. Tori, thank you so much for taking the time and pausing your adventure to talk to me today. This has been amazing.
No problem. I'm so glad it worked out. And thank you for being patient with me and all the noise, all the background noise.
And that is it for this episode. Thank you everyone for listening. Links on where to find Tori and all the things we talked about are available in the show notes at BIPOCOutside.com. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did having it. And if you did, don't hesitate to smash the like button. I hope you'll join us again for another episode of BIPOC Outside.